This podcast is an unscripted, unedited conversation about true crime. We take the cases very seriously, but I don't take myself seriously at all, and neither should you. Welcome to Wife of Crime.
So, Russ, I'm sure many women can relate to this. You're at home alone, and you just feel something weird. You kind of freak yourself out. You say to yourself, is someone watching me? Well, in the case I'm telling you today, unfortunately, that fear came true, and a young woman's life was taken way too soon. This is the case of Lindy Sue Beekler. Everyone, welcome back to Wife of Crime, a true crime podcast where I tell my husband Russ true crime stories and he reacts to them.
What's up, folks? It's your boy Russ, aka never getting in Jess's car again.
Well, and I'm Jess. And why would you say that?
All right, so we were having a problem the other day with my garage. We couldn't get my car out. Whatever. Mm-hmm. The garage door is broken, but it's better now. I'm back outside. Outside, folks.
We outside.
Let me open a beer. So, time I get in Jess's car, it needs gas. That's annoying. It's cold. And then she wants me to pump it. And then I feel guilty. I don't feel guilty, but I feel like people are looking at me because if Jess is pumping gas in her own car and I'm sitting in the passenger seat.
You look like a herb.
No, but first of all, you don't even put gas till I get in the car.
I mean, I fill up my tank, but you're only in my car like once a month. And the day that you happen to be in my car, for some reason, it always works out that there's no gas in it.
All right. And that's not even the only reason. So let's go through it, folks. I get in Jess's car. First of all, it needs gas. But first of all, I'm freezing, right?
Yeah.
She only unlocks her side, and I'm outside. It's freezing. 10 degrees, wind blowing. We live over here by the water. Blowing. And she's like, I thought I opened it.
I did.
I'm freezing my balls off. Get in the car. How many warning lights, folks? First one, needs gas. Second one, warning light, car needs an oil change. Third one, car needs brake fluid.
Well, that one popped brake up. That one popped up that day that had never been there before. Yeah, the oil had been there.
And but this is how it always goes. It always goes. It was this just happened today.
It did.
Yeah,
that one did.
Like if every place you go, you have problems with people. You're the problem.
So, I'm the problem. I'm not done. It's me.
I'm not done. Okay. I'm not done.
Oh my God. Okay.
Last but not least. She also needed air in her tire.
That one popped up that day, too.
See? Never getting in this fucking car again. Every time I get in this car, I have to fully maintain it.
Well, I mean, I don't know what to tell you. Russ, I use it to commute. Every time I'm with you, we're always in your car. You never have to deal with it. It's my problem.
But why are you playing with death every time you drive?
I'm telling the truth, guys.
And it's not an old, beat-up car, folks.
It's not.
2018. It has probably 20,000 miles on it. She doesn't drive a lot. We use my car everywhere. She just goes to work, which is a short commute. So, like, it's not an old car.
It's not an old car. When you got in my car that day, I had never seen the brake fluid problem. And, you know, it's cold. So sometimes the tire goes down. The air comes out of it. And the tire pressure goes down.
But every time I get in the car, it needs gas.
That's true. But it's whatever. Well, you got it out.
People. I had to file my grievances.
Okay. I'm going to have some grievances on here, too.
No, your job on this podcast is to tell the story. I'm the one that talks about other stuff.
Okay. So we were out to dinner, and Russ said that he thinks more people agree with him on the podcast. And I was like, absolutely not. That's 1,000% false. People agree with me, and they're entertained by you. But there's no way that everybody listening, more people listening, agree with you than me when it comes to stuff we debate about.
I thought we had smart listeners.
And he was completely convinced
that
when you and I debate, that the listeners, you guys, agree with him more often. And we did a poll on our Instagram.
At Wife of Crime Pod.
At Wife of Crime Pod on Instagram. And I am the winner because 65% of people agree with me more often and 35% of people agree with you more often.
First of all, put some respect on the 1% you missed. It's 36% of the people agree with me. Okay. So she forgot you folks. We matter.
We matter. Hashtag, so all I have to say is
we all votes matter.
All I have to say is hashtag vote for Jess.
I can't believe that shit.
So on the Patreon this month, we watched a documentary from Netflix called Voyeur. And I have to say our coverage was pretty funny because it was a pretty entertaining documentary in the sense of the people in it were weird AF. It came out in 2017. It's on Netflix. And Russ literally made fun of everyone the entire time, including me. He made fun of me a lot because we were using wireless mics because we were out of town. And it was just really funny. So if you guys are interested in listening to the coverage of Voyeur, you can go to patreon.com/wifeofcrimepod. Or now we also started, we got on board with the Apple subscription thing. So you have options.
Yeah, for like people that don't like signing up for shit, you can just like double click a button.
On Apple.
And you just sign up. And then check us out there if you're running out of episodes. We got a ass ton of episodes.
Yeah.
If I never said ass ton. Take that back. Shit.
So, yeah, you have options. So if you want to listen to True Crime and Chill and Blabbertime episodes, you can click on the subscription on Apple. If you want to go to Patreon, you can get ad-free episodes. You get a shout out. And there's multiple tiers over there. So it's your job to do the shout outs.
All right, folks. So every week, you guys sign up for Patreon. I shout you guys out. And we keep doing episodes. So these week's Patreons are...
These week's Patreons.
These are my Patreons.
Okay.
Is Jessica, Laura, Autumn, Cindy, Era, Taryn, Leslie, Inger, my two fools... Probably talking about her kids or his kids. Jenny, Nina, Rebecca, Michaela, Arielle, Brandy, Amy, Kristen, Mariana, Steve, Caitlin, Ruby, Angela, and Michael. So cheers to you guys.
Cheers, guys.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for joining the Patreon.
And as you know, every week I do a review of the week, and here it is.
Oh, wow. That was fast.
Yeah, but I should have said it slow because I'm trying to pull up the screenshot. I wasted the time where I start looking for it. Talk, Jess.
So, Russ always does the review of the week.
All right, I got it.
Okay.
All right, so this week's review of the week is from Dawson Without a Creek. It says, Russ told me to. 5 stars. So I did what you said, Russ. I stole my husband's phone because I'm an Android user and had him follow you and left a rating. Love you guys. You better read this review because you don't want this smoke. Thanks, Dawson with No Creek.
Oh, that's good.
First time ever, though, someone gets double review of the week.
Oh,
here wow. Again from, it's just a bunch of random letters, Dawson with No Creek again. Stole my son's phone, so here I am again. Keep up the good work. 5 stars. So shout out to you for the 2 good reviews.
Oh, that's awesome.
You're twice as good as everyone else.
Oh. You listen to Russ.
Yeah, so everyone, you know, if you have however many phone plans on your phone, you know, it's like 4 phone plans, $24 they will advertise,
like
that.
A family plan.
Mm-hmm. You gotta give us 4 5-star reviews.
Yep, that's right. Well, that's awesome. They finally listened. Okay. So there are hundreds of thousands of cold cases that exist, with new ones sadly turning cold all the time. Cold cases are so frustrating for everyone involved. I can't even begin to imagine the feeling of a loved one being murdered and then the family having to live out the rest of their days, never knowing what happened, who did it, and why.
And then that makes you wonder, like, is it worse? Because then you always have the hope that they're possibly alive, too.
Yeah. But sometimes cold cases are not missing persons cases. They're murdered, but you just don't know who did it and why.
Oh, I always thought cold cases in my head is someone's missing. If I was missing, mm-hmm. Do you think I was murdered or I left because I was just tired of your shit?
No, I definitely would think you were murdered. Anyway.
The crunched up face.
The case I'm telling you today is the oldest cold case in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania's history.
Is that the Poconos?
No. Mm-mm. Lancaster County is actually where a lot, like, Amish country is.
Horse and buggy?
Yeah, lots of horse and buggies over there.
Churn butter once or twice, living in Amish paradise. Shout out to Weird Al Yankovic.
Yeah, yeah. It is a tragic story of a young life taken too soon and a brother's 47-year-long search to find the answer to who killed his sister.
I love that. Never give up on your family, because they're all you have, but there are some toxic ones. Sometimes you got to cut the toxic people off too.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is the case of Lindy Sue Beekler. So Lindy Sue was born January 31st.
Rewind!
Why?
I'm going to say it to you.
Wait, what?
Are you ready?
Oh. I literally can't believe I forgot that. All right. Let me show you how it's done.
Well, this is what the other 66 whatever percent of people agree with. Shout out to the 36% on my side.
Well, this is the case of Lindy Sue Beekler. Are you ready?
Yep.
Lindy Sue was born January 31st, 1956. Her parents divorced soon after she was born, and she was raised by a single mom. Her dad remarried and had a son named Michael. Her brother Mike says even though she was 10 years older than him, he still remembers Lindy as a free spirit. She was incredibly loyal and so much fun to be around. When Lindy was a senior in high school, she met a guy named Phil Beekler, and they were together for about a year before getting married when she was only 19 years old. They got married early back then. This is back in the 70s.
Yeah, everyone like got married right out of high school and mm-hmm. popped out. I can't imagine having, like, most people had like 3 kids by like 30.
Yeah, my mom was 19 when she had me. So by my age, I'm 37. When my mom was 37, she had an 18-year-old.
I don't even feel like I'm old enough to have a kid yet. That's what's crazy. And, you know, I'm old enough where people think I should have kids.
You should have been had kids.
Yeah.
So after getting married, the two of them moved into the first floor apartment of a complex called Spring Manor Apartments in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. They were super excited to get their life going together. Lindy was ready to get the apartment all decorated and really make it a home for the two of them. After moving in, however, Lindy started having really weird feelings while being home alone. She told Phil on multiple occasions and some of her friends and family that she always had an uneasy feeling there. And when she was alone, she just felt like she was constantly being watched.
Mm-hmm.
After living in the apartment for a few months, Lindy walked into her living room one evening and saw someone peering through her sliding glass doors. I would literally die. While I was writing this, I have the doors, our sliding glass doors, in the same room as me, and I totally got the chills thinking about that.
I'm so uneasy with glass sliding doors, because why do we feel safe behind glass?
Yeah, it's very
scary. So easy to get through. All it takes is a foot. Mm-hmm. Now, but the thing is, what would you do?
Yeah, I mean, at that point...
No, you have to think right now.
Well, I know where your bat is, so I'd probably run and get the bat and just start trying to beat whoever it is with a bat. That's the only thing I could do. But also, I have a pit bull here, and Lucy would come to my defense.
I think the best bet would probably be to... Yeah, the dogs.
Yeah, Lucy would come to my defense. Biggie, he would just chill on the couch. He'd probably be like, yo, you got a treat? You want to give me a pet?
He won't even move. Just his eyes will look out of the side of his head.
Yeah.
I think maybe run out of the house, because we don't live in a rural area.
Yeah.
Area. And, you know, scream for help. I would probably just grab a knife.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Should I run towards the person? Maybe. It depends. I'd probably be really annoyed that they're at my door, and I'd be like, now I got to go through this shit and stab you, bitch.
Yeah, I know, but at the same time, it's a totally different experience, you being a man versus a woman going through this.
Really should think this out. What could happen? It could happen. What would you do?
Yeah. So as soon as she saw this person, They quickly left. But now, she was terrified and incredibly scared to be home alone, especially at night. Lindy worked at a flower shop, and Phil worked at a Hertz car rental, so he came home a few hours later than her every day. He didn't usually get off work until well into the evening, and this really affected her. It turned her into a very paranoid person.
What year was this?
1975.
Oh, that's fucked, because I was curious, like, did she call him on the cell phone? So no. He didn't. She was home all day.
Alone.
Alone, without even letting someone know. She had to call the police, hopefully.
I don't know if she called the police at that point, but from that point on, she was even more paranoid and scared. Her brother Mike says one night, Lindy and Phil came over to her dad's house for dinner. Mike was still a young kid, but he vividly remembers during dinner, a mirror upstairs fell and shattered. And she had such bad, like, PTSD from being so paranoid in her home and seeing somebody peering through her window that she completely freaked out. And she thought there was someone in the house. She made her husband go upstairs and check. She was just super scared and uneasy for the rest of the night. And that was just a mirror falling off the wall and breaking. So it just shows how much she was afraid all around that time after that happened.
I would get you a shotgun and show you how to use it,
mm-hmm.
even if it's not legal in New York.
Like, I think we would probably just have to move.
No.
We wouldn't move.
Shoddy to the body, and don't dismiss, because you wouldn't might miss Christmas. R.I.P. Biggie Smalls.
Well, R.I.P. Biggie Smalls, but we wouldn't move.
Nah, we'd blast that bitch.
I'd be home alone, Russ.
You got a shotgun.
No, I'd want to move.
I guess we'd have to move. But, you know, we have a mortgage and it takes time to sell.
Well,
they were
renting. This was an apartment complex.
Oh, if you're
renting,
you're out of there.
Yeah, it was an apartment. I mean, not everybody has the money to move, but that's a scary situation.
You can't just leave.
Yeah.
Like, all right, give me a little bit of time. I could save up some money and leave.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone doesn't have the means to just say, see ya.
That's true.
A shotgun is much cheaper than moving. And next, you just hold on to it. And next time you see someone at the door, mm-hmm. you shoot right through the fucking glass door and you blast his face in.
On December 5th, 1975, Lindy left work around 5:30 p.m. She stopped by Hertz car rental to see her husband, Phil, before going to the grocery store and grabbing a few things. She made it to her apartment around 7:15. Now, her aunt and uncle knew that she'd been really uncomfortable in her home, so they invited her to come to her little cousin's basketball game, pretty much just to pass the time before her husband came home from work, so that she wasn't just sitting in the house alone. So her Aunt Celeste pulls up to the house to pick Lindy up, and when she walked up to the door to knock, she noticed the door was slightly open.
Oh.
Celeste walks in and starts calling Lindy's name, but she didn't answer. She walked into the living room and found a lamp knocked over on the floor. She called Lindy again. No answer. But then she walks into the kitchen and immediately screams when she sees her 19-year-old niece, Lindy, laying face up on the kitchen floor, surrounded by blood, with a butcher knife sticking out of her neck.
Celeste, feel so guilty. Like, you left your wife and,
yeah,
you know, you gotta leave, you gotta go to work and do things, but I'd feel like if I was there.
You also feel like, oh my God, she was saying this since day one. She felt uneasy in the house. She felt like she was being watched. Someone was there. Like, I should have done something more. You know, I should have listened. It's a lot of feelings, I'm sure her husband felt.
But even in cases where there was nothing you could have done, people always feel like I could have done more.
Yeah.
What if I would have done this?
Of course, yeah.
What do they call it? Like, survivor's guilt.
Yeah, definitely.
# Russ the Profiler.
Celeste, totally distraught, runs out to the car to get her husband. They both run back in the house and call 911. When police arrived, they contacted Lindy's husband, Phil, and Lindy's parents, and secured the crime scene. The police quickly ruled out her husband because Phil was at work the entire time and was visibly devastated by the news of his wife's murder.
That's good that they dismissed him right away, because I always think about times where, like, the husband is a suspect. And, like, imagine, like, you're in the times where the husband's innocent. You know, mm-hmm. every true crime ID show, all these, and the one that contacted you to want you to be on their show. What network is that?
A&E.
Yeah, A&E's trying to get Jess, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Shout out to A&E. Don't forget the profiler. Hashtag what about me. But like, you end up the suspect when you didn't kill your wife.
Yeah.
And then sometimes those dudes end up in jail.
Mm-hmm.
That's nuts. Like, if someone killed you,
yeah,
and then I'm in jail.
Yeah.
And
Michael Morton, we did an episode on him. Yeah.
And that would drive me nuts, because now I can't be out there like Liam Neeson, finding everyone, chopping them in the neck like Taken.
Yeah.
Figuring out who did what.
Yeah, it's really, really sad. Well, they ruled him out right away because he was visibly devastated by the news of his wife's murder, and he was at work the entire time. He was very cooperative with police, and he even started blaming himself for not taking Lindy's complaints seriously, and it really messed with his head. Lindy's father arrived on scene and actually had to be restrained because he was so distraught and distressed by the murder of his daughter that he became violent with multiple people and got a bit out of control.
Wow. You know, it's very understandable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you obviously no one should ever hit someone, but maybe they were securing the crime scene and not letting them in.
Exactly.
And you'd be like,
I'm pretty sure that's what happened.
And, yeah. And, you know, they're securing it to try to, like, be able to find evidence.
Exactly.
It's understandable on all parties.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully they didn't, like, they just restrained him and let him cool off and didn't lock him up.
No, they didn't lock him up. They just restrained him. A robbery was ruled out pretty much right away because there was nothing missing from the apartment and there was no sign of forced entry. So this shows that Lindy either knew her murderer or the person may have slipped in while she was unloading groceries from her car. Lindy's autopsy showed that she was stabbed 19 times. There was no signs of sexual assault. She was stabbed using two different knives. The butcher knife that was sticking out of her neck was one from her own kitchen, but the second knife has still, to this day, never been found. There was blood spatter on multiple walls, and she had many defensive wounds on her hands and wrists, which told investigators that she fought hard for her life.
Wow.
Police found a large bloody footprint in the apartment, which told them that the attacker was most likely male. Police questioned her neighbors, but most of them were not at home at the time of the attack, so it kind of went nowhere. And many of the neighbors were ruled out as suspects. They branched out, they questioned her friends, family members, coworkers, but they kept coming up with no plausible leads. The case began going cold. This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. Well, as you guys know, this has literally been the hardest year of our lives. 2023 really kicked us in the ass, and it has been tough, I'm not gonna lie. I've spoken many times about the fact that I started therapy in 2020 after COVID, and it has been life-changing for me. I don't think I could have gotten through this year as well as I have without the tools that I learned and gained through my therapy sessions. Russ and I are a prime example that life throws curveballs. And if you're in a place right now where you feel like you need some tools that could help you deal with any curveballs that are thrown your way, I highly suggest you give therapy a try. Over the last year, we've partnered with BetterHelp to give you 10% off your first month. So head over to betterhelp.com/wifeofcrime1 to get 10% off. You can use promo code wifeofcrime1. And like I said, give it a try. See if you like it. It's all completely online. You just answer a questionnaire and they will match you with a therapist, and you can change therapists at any time. BetterHelp.com/wifeofcrime1, promo code wifeofcrime1. 4 months later, a few miles away from Lindy and Phil's apartment, another woman was murdered in her home. Her name was Mary Schinzig. Police immediately thought the murders could be related, and the perp could have been the same person because Mary was stabbed multiple times as well. However, months later, a man named Kenneth Dale Arndt confessed to the murder of Mary and was also completely ruled out in Lindy's murder because he had a rock solid alibi. He was actually not even in the state at the time.
Isn't there a thing where, like, they always think that if someone was stabbed, like she was stabbed 19 times. Mm-hmm. I'm uncomfortable saying that, but that means that, like, the person was anger, a crime of passion.
Yeah,
like, mm-hmm. They may have had her interaction with you or something.
So, yes, a lot of times that is the case. Like, stabbed multiple times like that, and especially this situation, it was two knives, and one of the knives was left sticking out of her neck. Like, it's pretty brutal. Like, is that something that you do to random people? Although, look at Brian Koberger, who stabbed these four college students multiple times, and he didn't know any of them personally.
Fuck this dude. I hate that motherfucker.
I know.
He thinks he's cool. You could tell.
Yeah, he does.
He's like, we're covering it too much, and we're talking about it. It's on the TV. He knows. Yeah,
he does think he's cool. So Kenneth Dale Arndt was completely ruled out in Lindy's murder because he had a rock-solid alibi. So cops were back to square one, and the case once again went cold. But then, on December 26, 1976, right around the one-year anniversary of Lindy's death, her parents went to the cemetery to visit Lindy's grave for the holiday. When they got there, they were horrified to find her gravestone had been destroyed. It was covered in red paint, and there were scratch marks all over it. It was the only gravestone in the entire cemetery that had been vandalized with this red paint.
Creepy.
Then, a few weeks later, in January, police receive an anonymous letter addressed to the chief of police. The letter was very bizarre. It was written in two parts, half print, half cursive, claiming to be written by two different people.
Nah, I kind of write personally in half script and half print.
Yes, but no. The first half of the letter was written in all script. The second half of the letter is written in all print. And in the letter, it claimed to be two different people writing this.
Oh, this is just one kook trying to, like, act like they have multiple personalities.
So this person claimed they were the killer and a friend of the killer. And this is what it said. Hi, Sheeler. Sheeler is the chief of police. Just eats up your heart knowing you haven't caught me yet. Still around. Lindy's marker on her grave just turned me on like she did. And the way she looked all bloody, like the paint on her marker, the scratch and the nick marks represent the knife stabs. Count them. You wondered if the guy at the gas station in Mountville were related to Beekler's murder? Forget it, man. No way. I'll tell you what, Chief Pig. You print this letter in the paper along with a picture in Friday night's Lancaster paper and Saturday morning's paper, and I might confess. When I get off my trip, you see, the world owes me a living. Maybe I give you a few hints who I am. I got busted once for drugs a few years back. Live in West End of Lancaster suburbs. I'm 5'10", 205 pounds, fat and beautiful, and capable of killing again without knowing it. December 5th, 1975 was under the stupor of amphetamines, like right now. Well-educated man in the community, single, good job, but God, please, Chief, help me. I am losing my mind. Help me before I kill again. The headaches kill me every time it aches. The drugs only calm it temporarily. Will God forgive me? Please print this, Chief, in the paper so I know you got it. Then I write you again. God, I need a priest. What have I done? Help me, please. P.S. Chief Sheeler, my friend has confessed to the killing of Lindy Sue Beekler. As God is my witness, do as he asks. Print this letter in the front page. I'm not aware of his intentions right now, but contemplating murder is not his intentions. He is mentally sick. When the letter appears, then he will turn himself in. He described the relationship he and Lindy had before he killed her. He only realizes now that when you're on drugs, you're not responsible for your actions. Please, he's asleep now. That's why I finished the letter. All I can tell you is my friend frequents Manor Shopping Center in the evenings and the fields around it, mostly weeknights. He will contact you very soon. Oh, and when he does, bring a Catholic priest to the police station. Janice Crum. Interesting.
So my first thing is I want to know, do they know really who Janice Crumb is?
Janice Crumb is apparently the friend.
But they can find, if you know the name of someone in a town.
Yeah, sure. There was no Janice Crumb.
Yeah, bullshit. I called bullshit.
Yeah.
I hate these people.
Yeah. He's playing games.
He thinks he's playing games, but you just sound like a fucking idiot. Like, you're a kook, an idiot, a cornball. Mm-hmm. But the problem... go ahead.
The police did not publish the letter. They didn't want to compromise their investigation.
I was just thinking that. Don't publish that shit because this person wants notoriety. Mm-hmm. Don't give them 1 ounce of anything they want.
Well, they didn't publish it. They didn't want to compromise their investigation because they did have a couple suspects now that they were looking into. So you agree they shouldn't have published it?
No way.
So
you... Because it's going to make this person feel good.
Yeah. And, you know, one thing police did consider is that the letters sounded similar in some ways to the Zodiac Killer. So at this time in 1976, the Zodiac Killer had been active around this time, but I think his letters stopped in like 1974 or 5. Okay, so it was like a year span of time difference. So for a second, they did compare the letters of the Zodiac Killer out in California, and now this is Pennsylvania. But they decided that handwriting-wise and other little indicators in the letters, that it wasn't the same. But in the beginning, they did consider it. But maybe this person got the idea from the Zodiac Killer. So an FBI profiler named James Fitzgerald analyzed the letter and concluded that the person had an explosive temper, that this crime was not sexually motivated since no sexual assault occurred. He said the murderer wrote the letter with hopes to distract police from whatever lead they were looking into at the time. He did not believe that the letter was actually written by two people. He also said the person probably was not a serial murderer, but instead would likely live under the radar from now on for fear of getting caught. He said the writer is left-handed and that this could be written by either a woman or a man struggling with their sexual orientation or identity, because women usually write as observers, which is how the second part of the letter is written. And another indicator is that in 1975, it was incredibly rare for a man to describe themselves as beautiful.
No, this is just a weird dude.
Yeah.
100% just a weird dude. You know, maybe he watched a movie on a split personality or something like that.
Yeah.
And he's trying to play that angle.
So police believe the killer is a man based on the violence and the footprint at the scene.
And she saw a man at the glass door.
She saw a figure at the glass door. She couldn't tell if it was a man or a woman. She saw somebody, but they ran away as soon as she saw them.
I wonder how tall she thought this figure was, because, you know, if it's 5'10", 5'11", or anything above that, most likely a man, because the majority of women, you know, like, you're 5'7", and you're tall-ish for a woman.
Yeah.
So if someone's 5'11", they go into the WNBA.
Did this person have a partner in crime? Was the letter written by a woman? You say not, and the police don't believe so either. Is this letter written by someone not even related to the case and just wanted to get the letter published? Because, you know, some of these people are weird AF. Like, they go in, they try to involve themselves into these cases. You know, David Berkowitz had a bunch of people writing fake letters after he did. Like, there's a lot of copycats out there who enjoy this type of weird notoriety. They, like, get off on it.
A.K.A. trolls. Like, it's exactly. like on the internet today, you know, people troll people, and that's why I tell Jess on especially on TikTok to post and ghost.
So it could have been some weirdo stepping in, or it could actually have been the killer. Now, the original letter has been lost, which sucks, because they could have gotten physical evidence off of it now that our technology is so much better. Mm-hmm. We only know what was written in it because someone wrote a copy of the letter for the police file.
Why wouldn't they just save the actual letter instead of writing down what it has on it?
Yeah, they saved it for a long time and then it got lost. And no one knows what happened to it. Over the last 46 years, there have been many suspects that seem to be plausible, and police have looked into many theories. They've looked into two separate serial killers. And like I said before, they even considered the Zodiac killer for a second, but all have been proven to not be the murderer. Lindy's brother, Mike, was determined to find answers. Over the years, as he grew into an adult, he would call the cold case unit asking for updates all the time. He tried to think of ways to get his sister's case as much attention as possible. In 2006, a volunteer group of 50 forensic investigators, profilers, crime scene analysts, and experts called Video CQ Society. I would love to be a fly on the wall in their meetings. They are a group that meets every month to discuss cold cases and try to offer up new perspectives to investigators.
Is this still real?
Yeah. They meet every month.
Huh.
They started taking a closer look into Lindy's case. This was in 2006. Okay. Meanwhile, Lindy's brother, Mike, reached out to the brother of another murder victim in Pennsylvania named Christy Murak. The two brothers decided to pool their money together and put both of their sisters' faces on a billboard on a major highway in Pennsylvania.
Love that. Don't quit.
The billboard showed the two young women, and above it, it says, "Do you know who murdered us?"
Wow.
It did bring back a lot of attention to the cases, because by now this was 2007, and so, you know, a lot of people had forgotten about this case.
Well, that's like, 20, 30 years?
Yeah, local news outlets started talking about the cases again, which was hopeful for the two families. But unfortunately, no real leads came in.
That's what's good about, like, you know, podcasts tend to sometimes get a bad reputation in true crime.
Mm-hmm.
And I completely understand. But on cases that are like unsolved and stuff like that, sometimes it brings a little more light to it. And some cases have been solved.
Yeah.
Like, look at Michelle McNamara with the Golden State Killer.
Yeah.
She did a whole book and then she passed away. And that was the dude, the comedian, the little
Patton Oswalt.
So that was his wife. She passed away. But now her work, while she's passed away, she didn't even know, helped find him.
Yeah. No, it's amazing.
So, like, in these situations, you know, this true crime craze has done some good.
Oh, yeah. It's done a lot of good. The true crime community, you know, there are things about it that can become toxic, but in general, it's done so much good for so many families and so many victims.
Well, I'm glad I'm out here doing good to everyone. Cheers.
Cheers.
As I'm drinking this Blue Point Toasted Lager.
In 2019, investigators released two images generated from DNA found at the murder scene. This DNA was found, are you ready? In her underwear. So originally at the time, for 40 years, they have been saying Lindy was not sexually assaulted. However, they found DNA in her underwear. So they used this DNA found in her underwear to make a profile of the murderer.
You probably could get like their ethnicity or something like that.
Exactly.
But the thing is, you can't get their cheekbone features and shit.
No, but you can get their ethnicity. You can get their eye color. You can get certain things.
Eye color?
That will, yeah. You can get certain things about them that will distinguish them from other people or kind of give you an idea of what they would look like.
I think we need a DNAologist or, you know what? Never mind. We need the DNA shop.
Mm-hmm.
Forget the ologist. We could have done it.
Well, the people who did it posted pictures, and I'm going to show you the picture now. They did two pictures. They did one of what this person would have looked like in 1975 and one of what they look like now.
Old ass man.
He's not that old, but he's actually in his 60s. That's what they presume. He's in his 60s. So this is him in 1975, and this is him now. You can look at it on our socials, Wife of Crime Pod on Instagram or on Facebook. I'll have it posted so you guys can see it.
What is it? Wife of Crime, the crime family, I think?
Yeah. They created a picture of what the killer may have looked like at age 25 and at age 65. The DNA shows that the killer's genealogy has roots in a small town in southern Italy. Both of Lindy's parents sadly died, never knowing who killed their daughter. And her case has remained cold for 47 years. Until July 18th.
You scared the shit out of me. You yelled.
2022.
Let's go. Solve the mysteries.
A man named David Sinopoli.
David piece of shit Sinopoli.
Was arrested for the murder of Lindy Sue. Get this. They used genealogy DNA to find ancestral ties.
23andMe, son?
Yes. To that small town in Italy, which narrowed down the number of Lancaster residents that migrated to Pennsylvania from that part of Italy to about 2,300 people.
Who put all this work in? Respect to them.
You know who did it? CeCe Moore at Parabon Nanolabs, who is the same person who is now trying to get access to JonBenet Ramsey's DNA.
Yo, shout out to CeCe Moore.
She's a G.
You the bomb.
So it narrowed it down to 2,300 people. From there, they used social media, newspaper archives, and court records to narrow it down to David Sinopoli.
Wow.
David Sinopoli is now a CEO of a giant tech company.
What?
And often travels around the world for work.
In the words of a bus driver, the best bus driver of all time, you're going to jail now. So look that up on the internet, folks.
So cops started tracking Sinopoli's whereabouts, and then they got their opportunity when he threw out a coffee cup in the Philadelphia International Airport right after landing there on a flight from Amsterdam. He had a team of cops, like, following him.
That's so dope.
They went right into the trash. They got his coffee cup. And then they used the DNA on the coffee cup to match the DNA found in Lindy Sue's underwear. And you can't argue with that DNA. That's not touch DNA. That's your spit and your semen. Like, there's no arguing with that. David was never on the cops' radar. But after investigating him, they found out that not only did he live in the same complex as Lindy at the time of her death, but he remained in Lancaster County for the next 30 years, living only a few miles away from where the murder happened.
I wonder if he wrote those letters. Did they ask him?
That hasn't been released yet. He just got arrested in July of 2022.
I need more information.
So he is currently being held in Lancaster County Prison without bail. Yay, science. I'm so happy that her brother, Mike, who has been her biggest advocate all these years, 47 years, Mike has been fighting for this. And I'm so happy that he got this answer. But I am sad that her parents died never knowing. But now, you know, the rest of her family, they can pursue justice for Lindy Sue Beekler.
Wow, what a good ending.
Yeah.
Not a good, you know, it's a bad story, but I'm glad they found him because I thought this was going to be an unsolved mystery.
No, and, you know, we don't know anything else. They haven't released anything. I tried to find, like, motive, any type of information, but since he was just arrested in July of 2022, I'm sure he lawyered up quick because he's the CEO of a tech company. I'm sure he can afford a good defense attorney, and he lawyered up and he's not talking. So I will keep you guys updated on this story. I found this case just by looking through cold cases, and I was so happy that it was finally solved. And I really wanted to find a cold case that was recently solved using this new DNA technology because I just love the fact that we've advanced this much in science. And I'm just really interested to see, you know, what he has to say. Not interested in a good way, interested in, like, I hope he doesn't come with, like, claiming innocence or some excuse or, I don't know, some bullshit or claiming some type of mental illness or anything. He's in his 60s. I think he's 65.
Oh, good. So he still has some good years left to suffer. That's what I want. I was hoping he wasn't like a super old man where, like, mm-hmm. you know, he got dementia and he don't even know he's locked up.
No.
Like, he's living a good life.
No,
he's a CEO, so he's making
good money.
And
yeah. Yeah, I found this case very encouraging. I looked it up, and I don't think, from what I saw, we're the only podcast that has covered this case.
Yo.
From what I saw, I looked it up on Apple Pod, and I didn't see anybody else on podcast-wise cover this, but there is some YouTube stuff on it.
Exclusives.
But I like covering not very well-known cases, especially when they're really interesting with, like, DNA evidence.
Yeah, we're like the DJ Clue of podcasts, because back in the day, DJ Clue only played the exclusive. He played DMX first, the Locks, and all of them. So, you know, Clue-minati.
All right, so that's our case. Check us out on Instagram at Wife of Crime Pod, and Facebook at Wife of Crime The Crime Family, Patreon at Wife of Crime Pod, and I'll post pictures so that you guys can see the pictures of the phenotype that they used, that they made using the DNA, on our social media. You can buy merch at wifeofcrime.com at our shop.
You should buy it there because you don't have nothing to wear. We got you.
And yeah, until next time, we will talk to you later.